Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 460 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hi, Adam.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm hot. It's very warm.
It is very warm.
Yeah.
It's very warm.
I know we're both doing Peloton classes.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm using them in between when I go running and stuff. And yesterday I was going to go running. I took my dogs outside in the afternoon after work, and it was like, it was a type of hot where I walked for like 5 minutes. I was pouring sweat and felt like I couldn't breathe. And I was like, I'm going to do a Peloton class because it is. Ugh.
It's so yeah. Bad. They have a, oh my God, we should totally put our handles in the notes. Anyone wants to follow us who also has Peloton.
For sure.
So they have like their outdoor stuff. You can do outdoor walks and runs where it's audio only and it tracks your mileage for you.
Yeah.
So like Peloton has like those challenges or whatever. And I was doing the July monthly challenge of like so many miles, and because I don't have the fancy Peloton treadmill, I have to do it outside. So I like take my walks in the morning. And I wasn't able to take it until like right before this. So I'm like all sweaty because I didn't have time to shower. So
it's so warm. Yeah. Also,
it's warm.
We should clarify. We're not sponsored by Peloton.
We
just both very much enjoy it. Both like I have one of the bikes, but also the app. Like I've given it to like all of my friends because you can have like 40 users. And the app is great. It's very entertaining. And the music they pick, there's so many options. Okay.
I'm a fan of the music, yeah.
Yeah, all right, that's probably enough Peloton promotion. Okay, before we get into what we're going to do today, do you want to tell people how they can get a hold of us, and then I'll kind of explain what we're doing?
Sure. So you could go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We have our social links. We are on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds, and you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com.
Yes, you can. Okay, so if you were all living under a rock the past week online, Hamilton came out on Disney Plus. The theatrically produced version of the play, or the musical rather, that was on Broadway, and it was very, very well done. And I watched it a couple of times. I do love Hamilton. I'm on record of saying that I like In the Heights better than Hamilton, but that's another story. However, as I was thinking about it, I know that Lin-Manuel was inspired to write Hamilton by a book, which I'll get into in a second, that he actually read about Hamilton. And I was thinking, like, Jill and I are both giant Broadway and theater nerds, and we've done a couple of, like, page to stage episodes in the past. But I thought we could do, like, we'll tell you a little bit about some of our favorite musicals, and then if you enjoy those, here are some books that you can read that either have similar like plots or whatever. So we'll put all the show notes in, but we'll kind of go back and forth, and we'll tell you a little bit about a musical, and then we'll tell you a book or two, whatever, however many we have. So the first one I did, if you do like Hamilton, which most people seemed to, but one of the interesting things that happened online after it came out was there was all these people who got to watch it for the first time that were like, hey, here's some historical inaccuracies. And Lin-Manuel Miranda was very open, like on Twitter. It was really cool. He was like, you're right that we obviously took a few liberties here and there. He's like, I had 2.5 hours of stage time to try and tell all these stories. So there's going to be a little bit of stuff that is missing in the life of Alexander Hamilton and everyone involved. So if you want to get more information about Alexander Hamilton and his life, the book that Lin-Manuel was actually inspired by is Alexander Hamilton by Ron Chernow, who has done a ton of books like this. But that's just like the general background. But if you want something similar to Hamilton, and for the other musicals, we can explain what they are. I don't feel like I need to explain what Hamilton is. It's a bit in the zeitgeist.
A little bit.
So if you are interested in that time and would like maybe some stories that aren't told through Hamilton, Revolutionary Mothers is a really cool book by Carol Burkin, and it's the women in the struggle for America's independence. So Hamilton admittedly does focus a lot more on the men of the revolution, you know, Hamilton and Washington and Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, all these people. But of course, there were countless women who were also involved. And so, a lot of them were active at home, organizing boycotts of like British goods and raising funds and stuff, but there's also a ton of stories about women who are fighting on the front line, including like women like Margaret Corbin, who was crippled for life after she took her husband's place beside a cannon at Fort Monmouth. So much is the case in a lot of history. Men tend to get the majority of the writing about, because they, for much of history, have been writing the stories. So it's really cool. Revolutionary Mothers is a really interesting way to look at all of the women who were involved in the American Revolution as well. So that's Revolutionary Mothers by Carol Burkin. And again, I'll talk more about the other ones, but Hamilton is Hamilton. So
Hamilton is Hamilton. That is fair. Okay. So my first one, the musical is Mean Girls, which is based on the movie, classic Lindsay Lohan film. And it was turned into a musical, which is actually really, really good. I liked the musical. I saw it when it came through Cleveland. God, it was not that, like, just right before all of this.
It wasn't that long ago, but it feels like 7 years ago.
It was. It was also, I think, the first musical I'd seen where they did, how would I describe it, a set. Like, it's not big sets. Like, you would
imagine.
It's stripped down, but they use not movies, but it's really
like
hard to
like the cardboard cutouts and stuff.
No. They had the screens. Oh my god, screens! Like the whole stage. Wow. The whole set is basically screens, big screens, and so that they can sort of make look like a classroom or make look like a locker.
Yeah.
Area of the class, you know what I mean? It was really cool. I'd never seen a play musical do that before. So anyway, so if you don't know, when Tina Fey wrote the movie Mean Girls, she used the book Queen Bees and Wannabes by Rosalind Wiseman. That was the inspiration, I guess. And this is a book that is all about The subtitle is Helping Your Daughter Survive Cliques, Gossip, Boys, and the New Realities of Girl World, which, yes. So this is a book, you know, if you are a mother of, or I guess a father of a teenage girl sort of on that precipice of middle school and high school, man, the world sucks at that age. So, and girls can be mean and... Hence Mean Girls. And so this just is sort of about helping girls navigate that. Honestly, as an adult, sometimes it's still a struggle. But I think it's helpful to know that, you know, like the movie is funny and the musical is funny and, you know, Regina George gets what she deserves in the end. But there's real world life applications, like the story of Regina George and the girls like that don't exist in a vacuum. Like they're not just like created out of thin air without some kind of actual clique and gossip stuff happening. And I feel like these days it's probably even worse to be a teenage girl. So
yeah, I can imagine.
If you have a teenage girl in your life that you are helping try to figure out who she is at a time when other girls are just mean, Queen Bees and Wannabes is the book for you.
Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking about, you're right. The stage production, it's almost like the use the screen. That's like 3D mapping to project the visuals of each set. It is really, really cool.
It's really cool. It's hard to describe though.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. Yeah. Okay. My next one is Cabaret, which we've both talked about a fair amount, and I'll get to a fun episode in a second from way, way long ago. But Cabaret is set in 1931 Berlin, and the Nazis are rising to power, and it focuses on the nightlife of this cabaret called the Kit Kat Club, and it's very like seedy, and it also revolves around the story of this American writer, Cliff Bradshaw, and his relationship with Sally Bowles, who's a cabaret performer. Who she's English. And then overseeing the whole thing is the master of ceremonies, who is just like one of the best characters in the history of stage production, in my opinion. But it's a really interesting look at not only the rise to power and all of this stuff going on in Berlin at the time, but the Master of Ceremonies side story is, it really, it also shows how those people at that time viewed Jewish Germans and really Jewish people all around the world. So Cabaret, the musical, is incredible, and you can actually go, and there's a movie version of it as well from 1972 if you want to take a look at that. But they're somewhat based on these two books that were written in the 30s by Christopher Isherwood, called The Berlin Stories. So we actually have both of them separately on Overdrive. A lot of times if you go to purchase them, they are just like stacked as one novel, which they call The Berlin Stories. But the first one is called Mr. Norris Changes Trains, and the second one is called Goodbye to Berlin. And they're both very, very fantastic, and they kind of follow a similar time. They're set in a similar time frame, like the early 1930s. And the first one is all about this English teacher, William Bradshaw, who starts this like friendship with a kind of sinister guy who is sexually deviant and spends a lot of time in kind of clubs and things like that. And it's, again, kind of similar to the actual structure of Cabaret. And then the second one, Goodbye to Berlin, is more so about pre-war Berlin and it's kind of like Sally Bowles' story. So they're both really interesting. If you like Cabaret, you'll like both of those. It'll give you some more background. And speaking of the Master of Ceremonies, made famous by Alan Cumming, who, if you go way back to episode 73 of our podcast, we sat down live here in Northeast Ohio with Alan Cumming and like 600 of our new friends at the time, when Alan was in, he was in Cleveland to do a Playhouse Square event, but he also did a interview at the library that we got to host. So episode 73, you can hear us interview Alan Cumming, and we do talk about Cabaret because you have to.
Sometimes I'm just like, was that real?
Ridiculous.
Okay, so the next musical I'm going to talk about is Jagged Little Pill, based on the Alanis Morissette album, which was a defining album of my childhood. Not really childhood, I was like 13, but you know what I mean. And I was supposed to see Alanis when she went on tour. Oof. It got canceled because of, you know, COVID. Anyway, so Jagged Little Pill. They took the album and some of her other music and they turned it into a musical. And which I think just, like, it's not that old. I mean, it's only, you know what I mean? Like at the beginning of the year, I think is maybe when it started. And in the musical, you know, it starts with the mom, Mary Jane, who's known as MJ. And she is writing the family Christmas letter. And she's talking about how, you know, the husband had a job promotion. The kids are doing well. She was in a car crash, but she's okay. You know, she's doing like natural remedies and yoga to feel better. And she's writing this in the Christmas letter. And what she's not putting in the Christmas letter is actually that things are terrible. She's addicted to painkillers. She and her husband aren't getting along. You know, like there's stuff with the kids. And the first book I have two for Jagged Little Pill. The first one is actually Dope Sick by Beth Macy. This was a book that came out a couple of years ago. And in it, Beth Macy goes into detail examining the opioid crisis that we have in this country. You know, I think a lot of times you think any kind of drug addiction, and opioids come up frequently, you think of, you know, rural areas and people who maybe, you know, are like lower class, but it's one of those things that as a painkiller, like white suburbia is mm-hmm. what comes up a lot, and big pharma and local doctors and all that. So this is something we're dealing with in this country and have been for a while. And so Beth Macy's book, you know, sort of looks at that opioid crisis that is happening, which is, you know, tied to that, the mother in Jagged Little Pill. But if you're looking for a fiction book, my recommendation would be Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste Ng. I'm sure you like, it's possible you've already read it. It was big when it came out. And of course there was a Hulu TV show, but if you haven't, the family, in the book, there's two families, but the one is a, an sort of upper, you know, middle class family, who are like picture perfect from the outside. And everyone thinks they have this like great life. They have this huge house in Shaker Heights, which is a suburb here of Cleveland. And you know, everything looks fantastic, but if you actually get to know the family, there's a lot of secrets happening. And it's just one of those things where putting up this appearance to outside people and sort of hiding all of the stuff that's really happening, and families struggling to connect because of all of this internal stuff that they're all sort of dealing with. So yeah.
Yeah. So I think I'm, now that you have read Little Fires Everywhere, I think I'm the last person in the world who hasn't read it, but I did watch the show. How closely, this is probably just for me, everyone else probably knows, how closely did the show, like, did it follow?
It did. There were some small deviances towards the, deviance, that's not the word I mean. Changes towards the end. Doesn't matter what, I'm not going to say, but
yeah.
For the most part, it follows it very closely. What's interesting is that in the, so there's two families, right? There's the Richardson family, who are the white family. That's Renee. Oh my God. Wow. I'm on my second cup of coffee and I'm still not like Reese Witherspoon. Like, I can picture in my mind, where did that come from? Reese Witherspoon's family is white. They're white in the books. The other family, which is a mom and her daughter Pearl, Mia and Pearl, I don't think Celeste actually says what race they are, and I think that's very purposeful. They cast, it's, you know, it's a black mother and daughter, which adds a very interesting dynamic, especially in a place like Shaker Heights. Which I liked. But for the most part, like, the core elements of the book and themes of the book are in the adaptation. There's just some small changes here and there.
Gotcha. Cool. My next one is A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. So this is set in London in, like, the early 1900s. And it centers around, the main character's name is Monty Navarro. He's this clerk who doesn't have any money. And he's informed that after the death of his mom, he's ninth in line to inherit this, like, huge wealth and earldom of Highhurst. And it's controlled by this wealthy family called the Dicequits. And they are a banking family. And so after, like, this ruling, the Lord kind of dismisses Monty's claim of being a relative. And then the eight Dicequits ahead of Monty start dying in, like, natural and unnatural ways, in very, very humorous ways. And a really interesting part about the production of the musical is that all of the Dicequits who die, all eight of them, both male and female, are played by one actor. And the actor does, like, the one that we saw in Cleveland, at least, just does an incredible job of, like, very, it's one of those, like, traditional comedies on stage, like, he's, like, over, like, way overacting all of the death scenes and stuff. It's very humorous, and the music is really unique. And then there's also this other story of Monty trying to win the hand of a person, of a female who is very, very drawn to his money. And so it's just, it's very convoluted, but it's also really, really funny. And it's a lot like the movie Clue, that I would say, but, like, it's just slightly different. I thought originally of recommending The 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, because that's kind of along, it's, you know, same thing, like, murder mystery type of a thing, but that's a bit more serious. The Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder is very, very funny. And so there is a novel called Skippy Dies by Paul Murray, and it starts with Skippy, who is this 14-year-old boy at a Dublin college, and, like, the opening scene is, like, he's dead on the floor at a local donut shop, which obviously seems very, very dark. but this book is hilarious. And it's trying to figure out, the entire book is spent like figuring out how Skippy died. And there's all these insane characters that could possibly be connected. Like there's a friend who is this genius who's determined to open up a portal into a parallel universe using string theory. And who's this one other teenager who is a drug dealer and kind of psychotic. There's also like a wannabe rapper who might be it, or there's a headmaster who is like, reminds me of Trumbull from her, Turnbull. What's the name of the Matilda? The
Trunchbull.
Trunchbull. Thank you. Reminds me of Trunchbull. Who's like very like ruthless and just all they want to do is modernize this. Like there's all these insane characters and you're trying, you never really know what's happening until the end. And they're just so wildly different from each other, and so much happens, it's just wild. And so it's, like I said, if you want like a murder mystery but one that more leaned towards like Clue, like where it's like kind of fun and you can sort of have a light breezy read, Skippy Dies by Paul Murray is really enjoyable. Also read 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle if you want, it's very good but it's more serious.
Did you ever see the musical Matilda? Have you seen that?
Yes.
Oh god, it's so cute. Those kids are
fantastic.
Amazing. Okay, so my next one is actually two somewhat similar musicals. The first is Beautiful, which is about Carole King, and then Love Janice, which is about Janis Joplin. Beautiful has been on Broadway. Love Janice is like off Broadway and regional theater, including, I guess, the Cleveland Playhouse many, many years ago. I had no idea. So, you know, we have these two female singers who kind of came about in the same time in the 60s, although they represented very different types of music. And there's a book called Girls Like Us, Carole King, Joni Mitchell, Carly Simon, and the Journey of a Generation. And so it sort of examines, again, it's like the same sort of time period of women in music. And if you like the Carole King musical, if you like Love Janice and just sort of want to know more about this particular generation of music history, and the women who represent it, Girls Like Us. And then Carole King herself has actually written a memoir called A Natural Woman, which, great title, Carole. Mm-hmm. Carole, go wrong with that. Which, if you love Carole King, like I love Carole King, you can read all about Carole King in her memoir. I do love me some Carole King.
I was just gonna say, I would judge anyone who doesn't love Carole King.
I found a vinyl of Tapestry. I think at the Cleveland Flea several years ago, and immediately bought it because. How do you not? And even as I was putting this list together, I was like, you know what I haven't listened to in a while? Tapestry on vinyl.
That Carole King's Beautiful is so, so good. I ugly cried during that.
Well, I should say, like, with both of them, Love Janice and then Beautiful, they obviously use the music of the singer in question. So it's like Janis Joplin's music and then it's Carole King's music are the framework as they tell the story of the lives of these singers. So
yeah,
good stuff.
Carole King was very much my parents' wedding song is You've Got a Friend by, they had the James Taylor version, but
sure.
The song was by Carole King. And so we listened to a lot of James Taylor and Carole King. I haven't seen Love Janice, but I really, really want to.
I was thinking about this too when we had interviewed Kiko Aghetti from Gilmore Girls. Like, Carole King is in the show as, oh my god, it's like this. I honestly forgotten all about this until I was working on, like, putting together my list today. She's like the owner of a music store in Stars Hollow. And I don't remember, I don't think her name is Carole King in the thing. So she's not like Carole King. But at one point in the show, they're trying to put on a musical and Carole King comes in to like the group meeting and or like the brainstorm session. She's like, hey, I have this music. Can we We check it out. I don't remember what song she plays, but it's one of hers. But again, it's not Carole King as Carole King. It's like a record store, like music store owner who's playing Carole King music that she's trying to, like, you know, within the universe of the show she has written. And they're like, yeah, no, I don't think so. It's like so self-referential in like the best way possible.
Also for people, because I forgot until this exact moment just now that we had interviewed Kiko.
We did.
Kiko played Lane Kim, like you said, on Gilmore Girls. And if you guys want to listen to that, that's episode 255, which I just looked up while Jill was talking. Because I was like, you literally were talking. I was like, oh my God, yeah. That did happen.
That did happen. And it was right around the time, I think, of the Gilmore Girls on Netflix. Because we asked about that. So
yeah,
I can't remember if it was before. It was just like right around that time when it came out.
Oh man, this is a blast.
Sometimes that happens. Oh yeah.
Oh. All the time. I can't think about, people always ask, you know, when I'm talking to someone at a conference, they'll be like, so who are some people like you didn't expect to be great that you guys interviewed? And then I have to like almost go to our own website and be like, let me remember who we've spoken with. It's been so many of them.
There have been a lot.
All right. So my next one is Kinky Boots, which is just one of the, what a fun musical. Did you know that the music was written by Cyndi Lauper?
I did not.
Didn't know that either. It was doing my research. I was like, oh my gosh.
Look at that.
It makes sense though. So Kinky Boots is much like, I think I honestly think all the ones I picked might've been Tony Award winners for best musical. I didn't mean to do that, but I think they all might've been. So Kinky Boots tells the story of this factory owner whose name is Charlie. His family has owned a shoe factory for generations. And he doesn't think he wants to be a part of the family business. And then it basically gets handed to him. And he's like, and it's failing. He doesn't know how to save it. He doesn't know what to do. And then he meets Lola, who is a, not cross-dressing. I don't know if it's technically drag queen at that time, but basically a drag queen. Would that be accurate?
I have not seen Kinky Boots. I do watch RuPaul's Drag Race, and they have talked about Kinky Boots.
Okay.
And I have gotten the impression it's a drag queen, but not having seen Kinky Boots, I don't know for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I think technically it's a drag queen, but they do talk about cross-dressing on there. And so what ends up happening is they form this unlikely friendship and they're trying to figure out how they can save this factory. And basically, and this isn't, the plot is not as important as the music and everything, so this doesn't give away too much. They realize like there's a huge industry for, drag queens and people who are cross-dressing for boots and like high heels and stuff for men to be able to support like their different frames and stuff, because it was like, I wear regular high heels and they just snap, and there's this whole thing. And so there's obviously the people who work in the shoe factory initially, you know, they're generic white men, so they hate the idea of this at first, and everyone kind of comes together and happiness ensues. But the music is so freaking fun. And so I have two. First one is Reverie by Ryan LaSala, who has been on the podcast before. And I even messaged him last night. I was like, hey, I'm shoehorning your book into a recommendation for Kinky Boots because I love it so much. He's like, absolutely, totally honored. So the reason why Reverie is a young adult fantasy that I'm going to go back and just listen to the episode with him, because it's going to be impossible to describe this book in like a couple sentences, but it's basically like Inception meets the Magicians. Like there's all this magic going on and all of this stuff. It's crazy. And there's these worlds within the world that like just you, these people who have this magic can go into these worlds and then they have to save the people who are in them and they're trapped. All this is to say that the villain is an evil sorceress drag queen named Posey, who is like probably my favorite character of any YA book in so long. And it's also, there's not a ton of fiction, there's not nearly enough fiction with drag queens, and so this is one that I really, really enjoyed. And then as a nonfiction, there is a book called The Asylum by Simon Doonan, who is very, very famous in the fashion world, which is hilarious that I'm talking about the fashion world, a thing I know nothing about, but even I know who Simon Doonan is. So he spent like a lifetime in the fashion industry. The thing he first became really well known for was like he's jokingly called himself the world's most famous window dresser. Like he is the guy who like he would do like a window thing for a high-end fashion company where it'd be like a little wolf stealing a child and the mother not noticing, and they're all wearing high end clothes and like all these just like crazy things. But he spent his life in it, and this is a story of all of these, like there's a book of a collection of real life stories about all these insane things that he's seen in the fashion world. So, you know, these like models who refuse to work because they're terrified of ghosts, and like going deep sea fishing with a really high end couture artist and randomly like their jail, their recently out of prison friend, or like watching these people who are extremely famous, like losing their minds in the back end and stuff. And it's just like, it's been called the David Sedaris of the style universe, which is like a perfect way. Like this to me would be an introduction to the fashion world that I would like, I would read and I would be excited about, because I'd be like, I don't know anything about high end fashion, but I'm all for like weird, hilarious stories of people that are trying to act like everything is perfect around them. So whether you're into fashion or not, The Asylum by Simon Doonan sounds really, really fun.
Now that I'm reading about kinky boots, I really want to, I may have to start listening to music immediately.
Oh, you're going to love it. Done. Oh, it's so good. The music does, is so good.
I mean, I see Billy Porter, so. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's gonna happen then.
You can probably figure out, you'll figure out very quickly who he is.
Oh yeah. No, I, it says I'm reading the Wikipedia, but as soon as I see Billy Porter, my eyes get all like,
oh, yeah, he's a pre- yeah. I'm almost certain he's the original Lola.
It, yes, that's what it seems to be.
Yeah.
Okay, so my last one is the musical Hades Town, which
had this and then I removed it.
Well, so maybe you have other books you can share then. So this is a musical that tells the ancient Greek myth of Orpheus and Eurydice. This is, of course, the one where Eurydice is down in hell and Orpheus has to go get her. And it, the music is just... I don't even know how to describe it. Well, I will tell you, this is what I can tell you. This may help. So the music is by an artist named Anais Mitchell. She had, she's like a folk singer. She had previously worked with Ani DeFranco. In fact, when they did a concept album of Hades Town, Ani DeFranco sang the role of Persephone, which is just bonkers to me. And in fact, one of Ani's, one of her musicians helped with the musical, because I saw Ani here in Cleveland last year, right around the time of the Tonys, like after the Tonys and after Hades Town, like won everything. Just days, I mean, it like took everything, or it seemed like it. So Ani, one of her musicians had like missed a couple of concerts because he was in New York City at the Tony Awards winning for Hades Town. Yeah, so it's so good. The music is so good. There is a reason it won all the magical awards. Mm-hmm. And so the book I picked, which just go with me on this one, is A Little Life by Hanya, I think it's Hanya Yanagara, which I talked about a few months ago. I read it at the beginning of all of this thinking it was going to take me a while because it's like 700 pages and I read it in like 2.5 days. This book basically broke me. It's so good. And the story of Orpheus and Eurydice comes up often in the book A Little Life. One of the characters is a filmmaker, and one of his first films was sort of a modern retelling of this. And then if you sort of look at the relationships, but the sort of core relationship in A Little Life of this idea of like following someone into hell to kind of save them, but also that person kind of being in a place where they're like, it's not so bad. You know, I mean, it's not great, but I don't know if I necessarily need to come back.
Yeah.
It's a difficult read. I will not lie. Again, it basically broke me. Like it took me like days to recover after reading that book. But it's so good, and Hadestown is just a lovely, wonderful music.
Yeah.
Cool. And I don't even know how to describe the music in it.
It's so
like sort of jazz and like kind of folk and like
that's exactly that's the thing. It's like it's when you go to see a musical or like when you watch Hamilton, because that's what everyone is doing right now. There's like there's music that flows throughout most musicals where like, and a lot of times when you have the overture, like it sort of like sets you up for knowing what you're going to hear. Hadestown starts with like jazz and it feels like you're in New Orleans. But that's like not what you hear most of the time. It's almost like it depends on who's singing.
Yeah.
Like if it's Hermes or if it's, it's crazy. Oh my gosh.
It's so good though. It's so good.
So the book I was thinking of is What Dreams May Come.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Okay. So it's by Richard Matheson. It was originally written in 1978, I think.
Book, yeah.
Yeah. And it's about the main character's name is Chris and he dies and goes to heaven, but descends into hell to rescue his wife. So can you follow along? There's a movie. Oh boy, is there a movie?
God, I remember that movie.
Robin Williams, Cuba Gooding Jr. Yeesh. Yeah. What Dreams May Come. It kind of follows a similar-ish plot.
It does,
I actually looked up, Matheson explains, like, the characters are completely fictional, but almost everything else is based on research on, like, what people talk about seeing when they think they're dying and all these
things. Mm-hmm. So,
What Dreams May Come. But yeah, also, you'll cry. I hear you're going to cry. On a lighter note, turn us back around. Oh, listen to Hadestown. Oh my God, listen to Hadestown. The music is so good.
So good.
My last one is The Producers. And this is, I have a selfish reason for wanting to talk about this one. So, The Producers is a musical that is adapted from the Mel Brooks film of the same name. The lyrics, music, and everything was written by Mel Brooks. It's phenomenal. It's the story of these two Broadway theatrical producers who they make this scheme to, they want to get rich by like completely overselling the interest of a Broadway flop. And then what happens is this Broadway flop that they create that's all about Hitler, like Springtime for Hitler. Springtime for Hitler, which is like just one of the best songs of all time. It turns into a hit. And then they're just like, Jesus, what do we do? And so this won at the time a record amount of Tonys. Like it literally swept the Tonys.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, 12 Tonys actually, I'm looking up right now. So one of the reasons it was so, so big is there's all these like show business inside jokes and like the people of Broadway love it. And they have all these ludicrous accents and like caricatures of homosexuals and Nazis. Like a thing that Mel Brooks is very, very famous for is like, basically his thing has always been people were always so afraid of the Nazis. I'm going to spend my career making fun of them because they don't deserve to be, you shouldn't be afraid of them. That only gives them power. You should insult them and realize how insane they are. So The Producers, just, I love it so much. I love the musical. I love the movie. I was recently having a conversation with my mom and I don't know how it came up, but she told me she hated The Producers and I like almost had to leave her house. I was so upset. I was like, Mom, come on, what are you doing? So the reason why I'm recommending these two books is Mel Brooks, his best friend was Carl Reiner. And Carl Reiner passed away last week. And I'm very, very sad. He was in his like late 90s. But for those who might not know, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner, the past several decades together, like they would watch Jeopardy and old movies together. And they're like best of friends. And like to me, they just reminded me of like the Statler and Waldorf of the entire world. Like they're everyone's grandfathers. And so Carl Reiner passed away. And I was really, really sad last week, and I continue to be really bummed out just because like Carl Reiner is one of the funniest human beings that has ever walked the earth. Mel and Carl were very famous for their 2,000-year-old man, but Carl Reiner was also on your show of shows and the Dick Van Dyke Show, and all this time or all this stuff. So I have two books by him. One, they're both kind of biographies. One is My Anecdotal Life, which he wrote relatively recently. And it just tells the story of his life through show business and how he got started and all of these incredible stories about Hollywood and television history and Broadway and just so much stuff. And then the other one is called Enter Laughing, which I'm actually re-listening to right now because he does the audiobook. And it's kind of like a biographical novel. It's this short novel about this 17-year-old kid who gets his start in acting through a very strange way in this small theater troupe. And it's somewhat realistic to how Carl Reiner got started. So My Anecdotal Life and Enter Laughing are two really great books by Carl Reiner that he wrote. And you can also listen to the audiobooks because Carl does both of the audiobooks himself, which is fabulous. If you are only somewhat familiar with the last name Reiner and wondering why I'm not mentioning Rob Reiner is his son who gave us Princess Bride and When Harry Met Sally and a million other things. But yeah, the Reiner family. The Reiner family and the Brooks family, those are two relatively successful Hollywood families out there. So
Yeah, they are. So, I was gonna say something while you were talking about all that and I don't remember what it was.
Doesn't matter. Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner.
I don't know, doesn't matter.
Producers. Okay. Yeah. Listen to Hadestown. Also listen to all these that we talked about, but listen to Hadestown first. It's so good.
The Producers is fun. Yeah. I remember seeing that. Yeah.
There is a story about Billy Crystal talks about it where he's really close with Mel Brooks. And Mel Brooks was trying to get Billy Crystal when he got done with his one-man show, 700 Sundays, which is on Broadway. He had done this huge run of it. And Mel Brooks was trying to get Billy Crystal to play one of the main characters in The Producers. And he's like, you know, you'd be so great. It would just be fabulous. It's like a show. It's been meant for you. And he was like, I don't want to play the character that Matthew Broderick made famous for like thousands of performances. He's like, I couldn't possibly be, you know, the second or even third version of his character. And Mel Brooks goes, you wouldn't be the third. You'd be the 11th. And Billy's like, well, why do I care then? No way. No, thank you. So yeah, I just think, oh yeah, great stuff. Anyway.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So those will obviously all be in the show notes. I thought this would be a fun thing. And then Jill's working on something.
I'm working on something. Yeah. So I'm going to do, yeah. So obviously, last week, 4th of July weekend, there were two, let's just say big cultural zeitgeists that showed up in pop culture and streaming. So today we talked about Hamilton, and next week we're going to talk about the other one. That's all I'm going to say. If you know what I'm talking, if you know, you know. It's going to be a lot of fun because it's not going to be your usual thing either. I'm very excited. So that's all I'm going to tell you. Figure it out on your own. Be surprised.
If you would like a clue, I will not be involved. That you may help this.
That is a good clue. That is a good clue. Yeah.
I do want to mention, speaking of things we're doing next week, on a much more serious note. Okay. Glad that you said that because I wouldn't have remembered. So this is coming out on Thursday, July 9th. A week from today, Thursday, July 16th, Jill and I are doing a Zoom kind of virtual event with Kimberly Jones and Yili Siegel, who are the co-authors of I'm Not Dying With You Tonight. They've both been on the podcast a couple times. I interviewed them like a year ago, struck up a friendship with them, and then I went down to Atlanta and interviewed them because they were also a Big Library Read title selection back in November. So they've been on a couple times. I've gotten to be friendly with them. And their book, I'm Not Dying With You Tonight, is about two young women, one black, one white, who go through a kind of a race riot that sparks up in a night, and they have to rely on each other to survive. And it is told through both of their perspectives. Healy is white. Kim is black. So recently, Kim did an interview about a month ago about explaining why black people, African-American people, BIPOC people, why they are so infuriated by everything that's going on and why it's just why the everything going on with the Black Lives Matter movement is so important, and just to try to create some context for people. And it was a 6-minute video called How We Can Win. And it went insanely, like literally millions and millions of views. Mm-hmm. She was on Trevor Noah's show, The Daily Show. She was on the
John Oliver week, too.
Maybe? Last week tonight, yeah. Yeah. Oprah shared the video. Lizzo shared the video. There's like the amount of people. It's in, LeBron James shared the video. So suffice to say, she is huge and extremely important. And she's been using this notoriety to continue to raise awareness and talk about extremely important social justice things. And she's just, she's so amazing. The fact that she's now getting, you know, an extreme amount of attention, and her and Geely's book is getting a bunch of attention, is not just because of her speech, it's because it's amazing. But they're a New York Times bestseller now, which is great. And to keep everything going with our Black Lives Matter community read program that Overdrive is doing, they agreed to do this event with us. So I will put a link in the show notes. Sorry, that was a long description. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to register for this. It's a 500 person limit. I hope it sells out. So when you hear this, go to our show notes and definitely click on it to register, and you'll get a link to go on next week. But we're going to interview them for a while, have a conversation about social justice and racial inequality and everything for the first kind of half, maybe 40 minutes. And then we'll spend some of the time at the end taking questions from people for Kim and Geely. So please, please, please sign up for that. Or we can remind you guys again on Monday's intro. And I'll put it out on Twitter and whatnot too. So yeah, man, am I glad you mentioned next week. It's great. So we'll have a lot of fun next week, and then also a lot of good information stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that everything, we think?
I believe that is everything.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I hope you guys had some fun with this. We had fun putting it together. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey there!
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema.
Our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.